This is the Amp Hour Podcast. Released February 15th, 2021. Episode 530. Living Through Chipageddon.
Welcome to the Amp Hour. I'm Dave Jones from the EEV blog.
And I'm Chris Gamble of Contextual Electronics.
Live in video, staring at each other again.
Well, not live.
Live, well, you know.
We could do live, but we don't do live. Yeah.
We're real time yes. Connected. Mm-hmm. Using Zencaster video beta. Anyway, mm-hmm. We won't crap on more about that. There will be...
Yeah, there's a video Dave did where we tried this out, so you can go and watch that if you want
to. Yes, you can watch that. So we decided, well, this Amp Hour episode we will record video of as well. So if you want to see our talking heads while we're doing the Amp Hour, it'll be up on the YouTubes.
Yeah, gotta get that Rogan money.
Yeah. So I guess there'll be two versions of this on our YouTube channel, because we do have a YouTube channel, the Amp Hour YouTube channel. So
that's actually really useful too. The thing that was nice about that last week, someone was on Twitter and they were deep linking to a point in the Raspberry Pi conversation. They were like wondering, like, oh, where was this? I think it was Arturo on Twitter, and he was talking about like something that some of the Raspberry Pi folks said, and then he could just deep link to the actual thing. So,
right, I actually forgot my headphones. We were too busy dicking around trying to set this thing up that. Hang on, this is classic. Quality. This is
classic. Yeah,
it's already impacted the quality of our show. There we go.
Yeah, well, you know, little pebcack right there.
Right. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Anyway, right. The real Amp Hour, the audio Amp Hour, which is what podcasting's all about, right? If it's video, it's not a podcast anymore, right?
I don't know. I guess we'll hear from our audience if they care. I mean, we'll see who cares about it.
Got it. All right. We have to talk about Chipageddon, because it's Chipageddon and it sounds
right.
So cool.
The BBC deciding to bestow quite a term onto Chipageddon.
Chipageddon. It's great. I just love the term. So, it's imminent disaster. You know, it's like, bunker down.
I mean, I've been talking about the first time I brought this up about 3-4 weeks ago, or no, maybe 6 weeks ago, you're like, oh, there's no problem. People want to hear about parts. And I was like,
I didn't say that.
Oh, yeah. No, we have recorded evidence of that.
Really? Okay. That's recorded. Damn it.
I mean, it just keeps getting worse, though. I mean, like, the things for me are just like TI regulators. For some reason, I just can't. Like, I designed some in, and they're like, oh, we've got all of our brand new ones, but, you know, of course, I'm designing in stuff from 2-3 years ago even, and that's not available. I don't know. Like, it's just and it's not like these are footprint drop-in place replacements. These are, like, you know, super specialized footprints, even though they're not, like, super fancy parts. They're super specialized, and, I'm stuck with what I've got. I think the last time I looked, it was a June 1st delivery to DigiKey, and so it's not like I'm going to go put in an order at TI.com or something. I'm not buying enough to do that, so I'm just going to design it out. I mean, so TI, if you're listening, this is on you. You're losing tens of chip placements per year. Tens.
They're quaking in their boots. Oh, boy.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, anyway, Chipageddon is, so the article just summarizes that, I'm not going to bother, like, pulling up the screen recording and everything for the video version of this. Sure, not many people are going to be watching.
You don't want to show version. You're not going to show the articles.
Anyway,
that's better too. Because then we don't say things that are like on screen and people are like, what are we hearing? Yeah, no, that's fine.
So anyway, there's apparently like chip shortages in all sorts of industries. And they mentioned the NVIDIA graphics card segment, the NVIDIA graphics card rollout, the iPhones, Xbox, PlayStations, and all sorts of, and automobiles as well.
Autos. Autos are the ones that I think impact me most directly, at least. Yep. And maybe you as well. I just like think anything.
Why would it impact you most directly?
Because industrial and auto kind of like cross over, right? You start to see a lot of things that are like qualified for auto processes these days. You know, they'll just be like, oh yeah, we qualify that up to 125 instead of 85.
Oh right,
and it's just
okay.
Like,
yeah, right.
And so they do it for convenience, but then it's the same. If it is the same part number, then it's literally like, oh well, it's either Chris Gammel buying tens or the Ford F-150 buying God knows how many. 100
million or something, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like, there's just no way I'm gonna get that, so.
Yeah. Yeah, because they're saying here, like, cars have over 100 micros in them.
Oh, totally.
And that's, you know, I mean, that's
And that's not getting any, that's not going down, you know. Maybe, well, maybe they'll integrate more, but,
but right.
I think just like the way that.
No, they're packing so many more gizmos in them, so many more sensors and whatnot, you know, like the door handle needs its own micro, you know, because it needs to detect that it's like, it's just nuts.
Yeah.
So
I don't know if you listen, but when Joris was on the show, you know, he designed the Tesla door handle. So
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, like, but I mean, that alone is like a very complicated, like the Model S door handle is like, it's a little robot, you know, it's like crazy.
Exactly. It's nuts. Because it pops out, or I haven't listened to the episode. Doesn't it pop out automatically? Yeah. It's got like a little motor.
It does. On the S it does. On the Model 3, it's a push. So, but it's like that, you know, flush thing.
Speaking of that, I tweeted last night, there's a video, I think it's on CBS or some, one of those, you know, big mainstream media things. It's the interview with the original founders of Tesla, with the two original founders.
Oh, I saw
which
that. Yeah,
Elon Musk is not one of them. And it's just like two nerdy engineers just being interviewed. Yeah. It's like, you know, these guys, like they're entrepreneurs. They did like an e-reader startup and stuff like that. But yeah, it's just, you know, they're just more interested in the tech than they are the business side of things, really. It's clear. So
on to the next thing, on to the next problem,
the next fun thing to work on. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's a different skill set to like go and take it and make it a big thing. It's just, you know, you think about like all these people that are like tech founders or whatever else. It's like, yeah, if you want to get super rich, you're not going to be day to day. Like very few people. I know they talk about
you're not
like,
going to be the day to day engineer. Like, yeah.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, oh, Elon like has all these meetings, whatever. He's in meetings all day long. Aside from, you know, I'm sure he's very curious. He's a very curious person, whatever. But like any of the tech people, it's just like from a organizational standpoint, you cannot dig in and do the tech stuff. And I just think it sucks. You know, if you want to do the tech stuff, you got to stay in the tech side of things, you know, like individual contributor. I thought about this for consulting too. And like the, you know, people ask me if I can do a job after I've already got a bunch of jobs, and I start to think of it. I'm like, oh, well, I could hire all these people on, I could pull in subcontractors, I could do all this stuff.
Yeah, and then you're managing.
I extrapolate this out, and I'm a project manager. And it's
exactly.
Like, yeah, I can make more money, but that's boring as hell. And I got into this to do more tech stuff. I want to do that. So, yeah, it's just, it's
that's
not.
That's it. And somebody on Twitter or somewhere mentioned to me that one of the founders on there, in this, one of the founders of Tesla, he actually does all these old retro computer compilers and stuff as well.
Oh, cool.
Like the guy's like, you know, he goes, oh yeah, I actually use the Tesla's co-founder's compiler for this old obsolete processor. Cool. You know, it's like.
Oh, we should try and find that guy.
Awesome. Yeah. Maybe we can get him on. That'd be great. And yeah, it's the typical story, you know, of people ask me, oh, why don't I form a big, you know, company? And no, it's like, Jesus, hard enough with one employee, you know.
Yeah, right. That's right. He doesn't listen to me anyways. He's on a forum all day long. hey, Dave, you're a little fuzzy on the video side of things. I know the video is not a huge deal.
Oh, no, it's streaming. Fuzzy. The local recording will be good.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Interesting.
Yes. It streams in 240p, but it records in 720p. So streaming deliberately gets throttled so that we can be more real time.
I'm just saying Doc Brown looks more focused behind you, so that's why I say
Okay. No, I'm, well.
Okay.
Really? No. It's all looking good here.
Okay. No, so, never mind then.
Assuming. Okay. Right. Because I'm trying to push the video to one side so that when I edit this.
That's good now. That's good
it's,
now.
Ah, okay. Right. All right. I'll push my camera back. All right. I'll figure it out. Oh God. Now I'm going to goof it. Nah. This is not gonna make my editing easier at all. All right. I'll just have to butcher it. All right.
Okay.
Not a problem. All right. Chipageddon.
So back to Chipageddon.
Yes. Chipageddon.
I think I mentioned my buddy who's a buyer, and you know, I was asking him about this stuff. You know, he's got in depth. You know, he's actually doing big volumes and all this stuff. He also mentioned, in general, like 5G rollout. So they mentioned iPhones, but then on the other side of it too, like towers, you know, like all the tower number is going up like crazy, right? So it's, they're still super
complex
devices. Oh yeah,
they've got thousands of them in a city. you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, that's another thing. And then just infrastructure around that, server-side infrastructure.
Oh, yeah. No, it's huge. It isn't just the tower with the transmitter. There's a whole bunch of networking infrastructure in a box down below somewhere. You know?
That's right. Yeah. And so he said that's definitely one thing. And then, but the real thing is, he said it was, okay, let's see, March, April, everything started to fall apart with coronavirus in the States, at least, right?
Yeah.
And so all these companies, they go, ugh, and they're like, pull all the orders, shut everything down. This is 2008 again. Red alert. And they do that. And then 2 months later, they're like, oh, look, the economy's roaring. And so, like, and so they all put their orders back in. You know, and what are you going to do? Go tell Ford or Tesla or Apple no? You know, and it's just like, so then it just becomes, well, we're just going to take every single thing that's in the supply chain that you can possibly give us. And and here we are. So many of us have been complaining on Twitter about this. And I think the best advice I've seen so far is, you know, it's not, I think it was Joseph on Twitter. It's not good enough to just like see that something's in stock and design it in and then go buy it. If you see something in stock, you buy it right then. Like
buy
as
right
many as you think you not like overbuying, but like it's like you need to build 10, go buy you, those 10. You know, it's going to be worth the investment.
Or 20 so, or 50 or you know, it depends on their price, you know, like if they're little, you know.
Well, and that's the thing though, but then the people overbuy as well. That's also I think contributing to it. Like people, you know, these purchasing agents as well, they're scared. They're like their jobs depend on it, right? And so it's just like, so then there's overbuying and it's just, so I think what's going to happen is in, you know, whenever the supply chain actually catches up, I think we're going to see a lot of extra chips because they're just all overbuying, they're over ordering as well. And so that'll be nice for cheap chips and about, you know, cheapest chips about the end of the year, probably maybe later, but like until then it's going to be a fight. So.
Yeah. And it's not just the pandemic, they said, it's, you know, it's all sorts of factors that are going into the chipageddon. Wow,
but you can get capacitors sometimes, so that's past that one, you know. It's just like it's just lean manufacturing,
right? And Samsung are building a big US fab.
That's right. This is actually, I think they're looking to expand. This is like the last time they did this was when I got a job,
right?
So this is down in, I think it says they got a permit for like Arizona and New York, I think, and maybe Texas. I think they're just trying to like, they're just going to like spread it around and try and get like tax breaks from all the different places that already have chip fabs.
Yeah. You'll choose the one that gives you the biggest tax break. Of course.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Oregon's not on there. Right. So Oregon, so like the main places in the States are Oregon, where Intel's based, and who's the other? Not Hynix. There's a memory maker up in Boise and Idaho, and so like Pacific Northwest. There's some chips factory stuff. Arizona's where like Microchip and some more Intel. There used to be a lot more in California, but now it's all small fabs. And Richardson, Texas, is where TI is, but they have been pushing off to TSMC and otherwise, which is another problem in the chipageddon side of things. Austin's where Samsung is.
Yep.
And then East Fishkill and like Albany area, that's where like Global Foundries and IBM exports came from. IBM is really Vermont, but a lot of their employees ended up moving over to like upstate New York. So this is the decision making I had to do when I was deciding whether or not to stay in the chip industry. Those are the five places I could live.
Right. And, that's it.
Only some of them sounded okay.
And you can't really telecommute in the chip industry unless you're maybe designing the chips or something,
then you can have to live.
But if you're on the floor, it's like, you know, the chips have to be made.
A lot of people I know, they ended up in like upstate New York in like pretty much a couple hours from where I grew up, and it's just like farmland, you know. It's there's a ton of really really smart people near the Finger Lakes, and
well, is that a problem?
No, it's just really boring. I mean, it's like
sounds nice. And it sounds cheap. I mean,
it.
Boring's usually cheap. So
that's true. Yeah.
Yep. Got it.
Yeah. So we'll see what they do with that. I mean, like I said, it's not the last time they did it. Samsung has definitely expanded since I was there in 2006 to 2008. So that's when they built the first chip fab after they built one in like 99 and then 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And then they expanded it over time, and they moved into the logic side of things. They started making Apple's chips for a while.
Yep.
And so this new one would be a, like a large expansion of that like high-end processor chip side of things. So definitely way more advanced than anything when I was there. So it's good news for for wherever it lands. But it's I think it's someone said in the comments even, it's just like, you think it's hard to get chips? Try and get the machines to make chips. You know,
exactly.
Tell and AMAT and all of the people that make the actual machines are just, they're very, very complex.
They're hugely complex, process. And for those who want to know, Samsung have, South Korea, they've got a USA, Austin, Texas line already.
Yep, that's the one I used to work at. Yep.
Right, okay, yep. And it's really the only South one outside Korea, of mostly Korea. South Korea. They've got like four in China, but more, you know, six in South Korea, four in China. One in
only
the US.
Six. Oh, only six logic fabs, I think.
Yes.
I think they have
fabs. Well, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia list of semiconductor fabs.
When I was there back in 06 to 08, they were building, I think, fab 15 or 16. Like, and they do double floor. So they're like these monster buildings, and then they're stacking them.
Oh, they're stacking them. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's, okay. Because that makes a much more expensive building. You know, like it's easy and cheap to build like a single level, you know, metal roof, but then it's all got to be clean, right?
It's not. I mean, it's not going to be cheap no matter what.
It isn't making a Tesla car, right? It's not.
I don't know. I think they might save a little bit just in terms of like the plants, like the power plant and the, you know, the water plant and all that stuff. You know, if you all of the logistics of having you know, the crazy chemical inputs to a process like that, so.
Oh yeah, no. There's not just machines, like it isn't just powering. You need all sorts of water and chemicals, and and all of that has to come out as well. And it's all messy business. Yep. And they're dangerous stuff too, aren't they? They're like really ridiculously, like, you know, aren't they, like, you know, fluorocarbons as well? Aren't they kind of all sorts of nasty chemicals that you?
Yeah, like HF is the one that they always talked about. So like
cancerous
hydrofluoric acid.
Hydrofluoric acid, that's right. Yep, so nasty.
It is. You definitely learn your MSDS, your material safety data sheets. So yeah, I don't miss that part of it.
Right, no, messy business. But it's very interesting though, but whether or not you want to work in there every day, you know, I've worked in factories and it's not... It's not that fun, like really messy factories, and it's not that fun.
Yeah, I think the surprising thing is that like it's really cool when you get into any factory, right? It's like, you know, how it's made of the world, they're so great, right? To see how things are, and then once you're sitting there for like a couple hours, maybe a day, 2 days, 3 days, you're like, oh, this same thing happens over and over
and
over
and over again. Yeah, yeah.
And that's how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be the exact same thing every time. And like, oh man, it is. Yuck.
So, and then you need to be Johnny on the spot, because if you delayed 5 minutes getting out there, that costs the company X millions of dollars, you know. Every hour the machine is down. You know?
Yep.
So, nasty business. Yeah. No thanks, I don't really miss that. So. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, design's where it's at, folks. I've been on both sides. Right.
Can we talk about KiCad? Because apparently you did a video that I probably should have watched. You just did an Eagle import video to KiCad.
Yeah, yeah.
Eagle to KiCad. Yes. Somebody pointed it to me, and I just released a video last night, which was trying to import an Eagle file into KiCad.
Oh, yeah? What happened with it?
It didn't go that well.
Oh, no? Okay.
I'm using the latest, you know, 5.119 version.
Yeah,
of KiCad,
5.1.9, yep.
Which is the latest 19, release.
.19,
yeah, which is the latest release. And, you know, it imported but gave me some errors, and then there's all sorts of, it's messy. It's messy. The power planes aren't connected. Oh, this is for the Trezor crypto key. I downloaded open source hardware stuff and, to see if I could import it into, and they're Eagle files. So the only thing I had was the Eagle board and schematic files in an older version, 7.77 of Eagle, and tried to import it. Yeah, it wasn't that great. And then everyone, you know, a lot of people said, oh, yeah, everyone has issues with it. It's not great. And people have written their own Eagle import scripts because it doesn't work that well. So they had to write their own to solve, you know, some issue they've got, things like that. So was yours easy? I haven't watched your video. Is there some trick?
The old one was messy, right? It was just whatever. But a lot of that stuff has been improved in the 5.99, which is the pre-release for the version 6. So.
Oh, okay. Right. So I'm simply not using the latest. Well, I'm not. I am using, well, the latest release. Stable. Yeah, stable. Exactly. That's right. Okay.
And we should be. So it is February. I think FOSDEM is happening or did happen. That was kind of like the target for V6. I don't think they're. Right. I don't think they made it. I think we probably got another month or two.
Hence 5.99.
Well, they've been like that. So they want to have it so that they can, so that it's very easy to tell it's not going to be. You wouldn't be able to catch up to that revision even if you had to rev the stable many, many, many times, right?
Right.
So it's like you don't want to call it V6 or V6 RC. You basically call it 5.99, and then when you're ready, you tip that over into the V6 thing. So
got it.
Yeah. So the V6 is nice, but it's still some
issues. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Here's something somebody took me to task over, because I complained about that they didn't put the Gerber files in the Git, in the Git repository. And everyone says, no, you should never. And I said, oh, there's no PDF schematic in there either. And there's no, you know, it was just the board. It was just the original board and schematic file. That was it. No project files, no nothing. And people took me to task saying, no, that is what Git is for. Git, you do not put the compiled stuff into Git. But I thought that's what you've been crapping on about for years.
Yeah, they're talking about software, though.
Yeah, I know they're talking about software, but they're...
I don't abide by that, actually. I think I think is the wrong... I keep my source files in Git, GitHub. Yep. But then what I do is I've started standardizing on an input folder and an output folder.
Because
on input, I want to, like, capture all of my... any step file that I'm bringing in, any kind of graphics I'm bringing in, anything like that. But then at output, it's all manufacturing files, right?
Yep.
And the tough thing, the reason they say that is they don't want things to get out of sync.
That's what I was going to say, yeah. It's about sync, yeah.
Right.
And there's sync-obsessed people, because that's what Git solves, right? Is supposed to solve. Right. And then this hardware business comes along, it just screws everything up, right? Because we have to make stuff.
It's kind of like, it's like jury rigging it for the system that's being put in, right? And so if you're releasing a Rev A to production, okay, great. You're supposed to, like, so basically one way that you could do it is you say you tag at whatever revision is, you tag it and you say, and then you could, and the tag is maybe labeled Rev A, you know, very simple, all lowercase, whatever. Mm. At any point, you could then go and say Git checkout Rev A, and it'll zoom you back to that point, and you could view the files, whatever. Personally, I do not like that. I still do that, and I like that. But when Rev A happens, I put an official schematic in the output folder, and then in Rev. So then, by the time I get to Rev D, which happens quite often, I actually have Rev A B C in the output folder. At each tag point, because most often I need that reference to go back to. I can't switch, you know, like I can't have multiple repositories and, you know, side by side compare. I want the actual hard file there. And so,
but what if you just made some changes but you didn't actually release that schematic, would you still put that in the output folder?
No. I want the official one, that's because anything that is at the mark,
anything that went public,
manufacturing. Well, in manufacturing, really. That's what I care about. Well,
manufacture. But even if, but what if you manufactured a prototype and it didn't go anywhere and you only care about the ones that went public, for example, because you're doing 10 internal prototypes. Uh-huh. You know, you're just doing prototype after prototype, you know.
Sure. I mean, yeah, then I would put all, you know, put you would
put them
in
all
there.
In. Okay, right.
Yeah, I think so.
All right.
Would you? I mean, how would you do this?
Oh, I've done both. Okay. I'm guilty of doing both.
I don't think there's a right answer here, right?
It depends. No, there is no right answer. But, you know, I got taken to task by the Git purists because they said it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They're talking about it from a software perspective, right?
Exactly.
I get it. Like, they don't like binaries.
Totally.
And
I don't like
binaries either, you know? They say, oh, you should build from source. You should have this whatever.
Yep. I don't, always build,
you know,
from
and
the source.
And they're, like, talking about, like, automation and what they're called, like continuous integration type stuff. And it's like, you should always build the latest or build it from source at a certain time. I don't agree with that.
I know.
I would love to hear arguments against it, but just saying don't do it is not a good enough argument for me.
Well, this Trezor thing, right, is probably a classic example, right? They've got, for the older version, they've got more stuff. I was working on the newer model Trezor, but for the older one, they included the bomb and they included PDF schematics. They included all sorts of stuff. And I looked in the firmware folder for it, and it's like, at a glance, it may be there, but at a glance, I couldn't just find the binary to program the chip, right? Am I expected to recompile it from source? Like, you know, I just want the, you know, because I'm making this, I'm duplicating it. So all I don't care about the source. That's their job to handle, right? Or it's the community's job to handle. All I want, I'm just making the widget. So I don't, you know, all I care about is the binary to program the chip. That's it. That literally is all I care about.
So sometimes it exists in the releases folder, right? So there's when you do an actual release, when you tag something, it will do a release. But there should be a binary at that point. Like, there should be somewhere.
It's got to be somewhere, but it may not be in the source. Yes, it could be in some release subdirectory somewhere that I haven't found yet.
Well, and so KiCad still doesn't have a way to script to, like, the API is catching up in terms of, like, scripting. So there's a talk by Jesse Vincent, who has been on a show during one of the travel shows I did. But Jesse runs Keyboardio, and he did a talk at KiCon about basically this whole idea of, like, scripting it out so that when you tag, so that you say, hey, this is Rev A, you hit go, and it goes and it zooms off and it generates your Gerbers and your BOM and your, and I think Ultium does this sort of thing, right? And it generates basically a manufacturing package.
Yep.
Yeah, and so, like, basically that kind of idea, and I like it a lot. It's just, you know, if it's not built in right now, I'm not really capable of doing it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Got it. All right. So, yeah, Git, please leave it in the comments down below if you, what you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be great to know. I mean, like, that's the thing. That's.
Yeah. I have no problem with it not being in the actual source subdirectory. That's fine. I'm fully on board with that. But, yeah, there should be, like, an output folder somewhere.
Yeah.
But there's not. So, you know. Anyway, so yeah, I can't push my stuff back into somebody else's Git, can I? I've got to do a pull request.
Yeah, so the way you do it is you would fork the repository, right? So if Trezor has this open source thing, you fork it, and then it basically creates a copy in your GitHub account.
Yep.
It's the exact same. Basically, it tags it at, not tags it, but it basically grabs it at the exact time that you did that fork.
Yep.
You go and make your changes to it, and then you say, you push the change back to Trezor, and you say, hey, here's the changes I made. Do you want to include these in your repository? And they say, yeah, sure, why not?
Right.
That's like a...
So that may not be changing the source at all. That may just be adding an output subdirectory because they haven't done it. So someone like me could come along, fork it, do an output subdirectory, and then put all the files in there and then do a pull request for them to pull it back in, right? Yep. See, I'm totally with it now. I'm totally with this Git thing. I'm learning.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a bit of a shift, especially if you're coming, like, because the Ultium stuff's also Subversion, and so...
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm used to when I worked at Ultium, we were using Subversion,
It's
I assume they're still using it for their own source code and stuff
like
that.
I think they are, a lot of people do still, so...
Right.
It's kind of more, it is more like, kind of zip up the whole idea, right? Which is problematic when there are binaries, and really, I think this is where... ASCII-based type stuff like KiCad does and Eagle does, it's nice because you can actually see changes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and being able to view stuff as well, right? So, like, I think that's an argument against... So if you are using, like, a proprietary... Say you have to use Ultium for this thing, then I think it actually does make sense to have Gerbers and all the other stuff there just because even though there's viewers out there, it's just hard to get to that data, I think. You know, it's just... If you have a PCB doc or a SCH doc or whatever the thing is... It's tough to get to.
Well, I think regardless of what package you use, you should be, you know, if you're going to do an open source thing, I guess, you know, there should be like an output folder just to make it easy for people. But, you know, you don't have to. And if you don't want to, because you just don't want to, that's fine. You know?
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Right. So.
Yeah, I try and I think the thing that I've been figuring out for myself is just like being kind to myself, my future self. Right? That's like
right.
a thing for me.
Exactly.
It's just like, oh, yeah, I have opened up some projects recently and I'm just like, what the hell was I thinking here? You know?
Yeah, they're a mess.
Yeah.
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 I know.
Yeah.
All right. What else we got on the list today?
Well, speaking of great advice that I give myself, I am signing up to give other people advice. So I am starting a new course called Hang Your Technical Shingle, An Introduction to Consulting. So this is a new...
Hang your technical... what?
Hang your technical shingle.
What does that mean?
Like hang your shingle? You know, you've ever heard of that before?
No. A shingle is a roof tile, isn't it?
That's right. Or it's like, it's kind of like the thing that's like an old blacksmith shop. You know, it'd be like hanging outside, like the sign that says it's a blacksmith shop.
Oh, okay. Yeah, got it. Okay.
They call it a shingle sometimes too. So you hang your shingle. Basically, it's a colloquialism for going out on your own for business. So hang your technical shingle would be, you want to go become a consultant. I've been making videos now for a couple weeks. Basically, I have a course. All the things I wish I would have known before I got started consulting. And so let me tell you, Dave, it's about 5 pages of just outline. So we're going to go through and we're going to, you know, so if people are interested in becoming a consultant, a technical consultant specifically, not like a management consultant for like McKinsey accounting consultant or anything like that. This is like
a design consultancy.
Design consultancy, exactly.
Yeah. Or whatever skill you happen to have.
Exactly. And so it's good for software people. It's good for hardware people. It's good for mechanical people. Yep. I wouldn't say it's good for someone who's like a creative, you know, like a graphics designer, but maybe. I don't know.
Okay.
But definitely not like a management consultant.
The advice can be greatly different between software and hardware, though. Is that something that you touch on?
Yeah, but not when you're talking about like how to do marketing and how to do accounting.
Oh, okay. No, they're fairly universal, but
how to do legal stuff, all that stuff.
Course. Right.
Yeah, so,
and it'll be country specific too, because there's like,
that's
tax
true, yeah.
and then do you get into that sort of stuff?
Well, I mean, we talk about it broadly.
Tax and finance side of things. And
the big piece of advice is hiring someone. Like that's pretty much what it starts with. This is like, you should hire someone. But accounting methods like GAAP, GAAP, like that stuff is the same everywhere. So like bookkeeping and similar things. So this is basically...
Well, it's not the same here. I bet you our laws and tax rules and everything would be different to the US.
Let's find out right now. Let's see if Australia uses GAAP.
Nope, Australia. I've never heard of GAAP.
Well, you're not an accountant though.
Well, no, I'm not. Okay. Fair enough.
Generally accepted accounting principles. The Australian equivalent to IFRS. So.
Okay. Right. Yes.
Do you know what that is or no?
I've heard of it. I don't.
Okay. All right. So maybe
that's why I pay like $5,000-$6,000 a year to my accountant. Like I pay a shitload of money to my accountant who handles all my business stuff, handles all my personal tax returns and everything. You know, it's like,
So I think there definitely are going to be country differences, especially on the money side of things and taxes and stuff, and corporations for sure. But, you know, marketing's the same, mindset's the same, stuff like that. So, I've got a beta program going like I did for Contextual Electronics back in 2014 now. Oh, my God, it's been a long time.
Jeez.
So it is going to be a paid beta, so that's important to state up front.
Oh, yes, yes, it's not free. No.
Yeah, just because... Yep. As I say in the intro video, like I had 50 people sign up for the, actually I had like 150 people sign up for the first Contextual Electronics beta, and I said yes to 50, and about 5 showed up the first day. So.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep. Was that one paid at the time, or was that one free?
That was all free. Yeah.
Oh, so okay. I was going to say paid, you'd get a higher percentage showing up because they've.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's not going to be a lot. It's going to be much reduced from what it is normally. And there's like a coaching component, so we're all going to talk and like have like group calls and stuff like that too, and just kind of talk through. The consulting side of things. Obviously, I've been talking about consulting a lot on here.
Yep.
I mean, I love it. I really do. I think it's terrifying sometimes, especially at the beginning. It was terrifying, but I love the problems I get to work on and like the amount of control I get and just, you know, like I'm the only electronics person in the room most of the time. Like that's cool. That's like, it's great.
What people need to remember with the consulting gig is that you're still working for someone.
Yes, right. Yeah,
like you aren't your own boss. You have
4 or 5 bosses usually.
you have 4 or 5 bosses. Yeah, exactly. They're called clients,
that's right.
And they'll make spouses. You do ridiculous, stupid stuff that you can't argue against, you know, because they're paying you to do this ridiculous stuff.
Well, no, you can though. I think that's the thing.
Well, you can try in a nice sort of way, but at the end of the day, they're the ones who decide which way to go. And if think that's a dumb idea, this is not going to work.
Right. Like, right. They're like saying, we're going to make this a battery product and we want it to also, you know, be a kilowatt of energy. It's just like, okay, cool, I guess. You know, yeah, you're right. At the end of the day, you make your case, and that's the best you can do. But I think that's actually an important thing as well, is like building your marketing enough so that you can pick the right clients. Like, finding the right clients is like a key to happiness. If you just take any job that comes around, and you know, everybody starts like that, right?
That's not really marketing, though.
No. Marketing is having enough coming in the door so that you can be choosy.
Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Yeah. Because I was going to say, for a consultancy, marketing, like what people think of for as when you say the word marketing, that's just an absolute waste of money. Paying to like advertise your consultancy on Google AdWords something. It's just, you might as well flush your money down the toilet.
I can't even imagine how expensive that would be.
Yeah, exactly. Just flush your money straight down the toilet.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. And that's not going to be like, I think that's another thing too, is just like finding people, you know, having people find you is a lot different than you finding people, right? So I would put the Google search terms in like you finding people, but you're going to find everyone. You know, you're just going to find like the people who are like, I need an inventor, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I couldn't run fast enough in the other direction. If someone said, I need an inventor.
That's an instant refuse.
Right, they're like up late night, they're like, they see that commercial. You guys don't have the commercial there, but there's like this one commercial here where it's about like, are you an inventor? And then it's like this caveman like hitting a rock into like a wheel.
No.
Oh yeah, classic commercial here. And like, you know, they're scamming those people. Anyways,
don't even do the classic over-quoting thing either. Like, you know, if you don't want the job, don't quote five times more. Just simply say, no, sorry, not interested.
No bid. No, that's good advice.
Just don't do it. It's like, you know, like I was offered, I've told the story. I was offered like 20 or 25 grand or something and a trip to Canada if I would come out and verify this guy's energy device. And you know what I'm talking about when I say energy, right? It's like, oh, it's not free energy. No, trust me. It's, you know, like, and seriously, like, you know, he was like 25, like US, that is, 25 grand.
That's not
US
what I would have put in the category of consulting.
Yeah.
But I guess that is a consulting job.
He wanted me to come out and verify. And it's simply no amount of money is worth working on that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just no. No, go away.
So if people are interested in the beta, there's an application. There's I made a bunch of videos, like the introductory videos for each section, kind of just talking through what we'll be talking about there. All the usual stuff there. I try not to promote Contextual Electronics too much on here.
Aha! I've got your course content list. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, people can go and check that out. It's got some early content. We're going to figure it all out. And the reason I have beta people, the videos I'm kind of working through, that's fine. I was going to make my stuff anyways, but it's also like, what do people need to know, right? So like the people that are worried about getting started, I have my own fears and that stuff's still fresh in my mind.
And here is the course content, introduction to the consulting course. Money handling. Money's right up front. Because if you don't have money, you're out of business.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a whole section on accounting, but also, like, cash flow. Man, like, you know cash flow, too, right? We talk about that on here.
Oh, yeah,
like,
we did. I simply ran, my business ran out of cash at one point. You know, I was sitting pretty, literally 1 week. I was sitting pretty. Then the next week, I went, I'm out of cash. I'm, like, you know, I'm simply out of cash. I didn't have to do that, like, but it was just because I didn't manage
the opportunity rose, right? And
and it's just like all these purchase orders came that I'd promised months and months ago, because there's a big lead time, you know. So I promised to buy all this equipment from multiple stock from multiple manufacturers, and it all sort of just hit at once, and bam, you know, all my cash vanished, like, and I had to stop paying myself wages. Like, you know,
exactly.
It was, just so I could buy the stock. And so anyway, money handling. Next, marketing. 4, legal and administration. Groan. 5, client relationship management. Once again, groan. You know, it's just, all this stuff is groan already. It's like time management, groan. Professionalism. Oh, okay. You know, it's like, she'll be right. No worries. Number 8 is resourcefulness. And 9 is mindset. Where's the engineering, Chris? Where's the engineering?
That's the rest of Contextual Electronics, Dave.
Right, that's a different course.
That is. I mean, seriously, yeah.
This is
like the end of contextual electronics, right? This is basically, yeah, you've already learned all the other stuff on contextual electronics. You know how to build stuff. You build stuff, yep, on your own, whatever. You, yep, want to go out on your own? Yeah, this is all the stuff that you've grown at, and you're like, oh, I never thought I'd need to know this stuff.
And that is the point. Like, you know, yeah, everyone, as someone who's doing this, will already have the technical skills, right? Yeah. So there's no, yeah, exactly, right, you know.
Right.
So you,
I wouldn't expect to someone to start tomorrow and be like, oh, well, you know, I'm, yep, figuring out what resistors are and I'm going to go offer my services. No, man, like 10 years though, and you've got like, yeah, you know, like you've got a Greg Davil level of portfolio stuff and you're ready to go offer your, you know, to hang your shingle. Yeah, like that, you are the person then, you know. But the big thing, right, is like, so we've talked about on here, like how would you go, so say you've got a huge portfolio and then you go and turn around and you go and try and get a job at like a, you know, big company. It's like you're gonna get stopped by HR every single time, you know, yeah, just because you don't, yep, have the degree or the right degree or the experience.
Or you don't have the experience at a big company. So yeah, you,
exactly,
know. Yeah. Yep.
So
yeah. So yes, they're supposed to be grown worthy. Professionalism, money handling, marketing.
Right. I'm gonna put Dave as my testimonial. Grown worthy, Dave Jones.
Grown worthy. Oh boy. Yeah. Well, I hope that works well. Well done.
Yeah.
Yes. Thanks, man. That is, yes.
We'll see how it goes.
That's, yep.
Yeah, I think the other thing too is just like, you know, building community around it too. Like, you know, it's just,
yeah, right. Well, you've already got that with the, because you've got the forum, don't you? You've got the,
that's
consultants,
right, yeah,
consulting forum. So,
yeah. This is, yep, going to be separate from, this is going to be like a subsection of that even, just because, oh, it's going to, okay, be like, right, as people are getting started. Right. But yeah, there's also the consulting forum and things like that. So
is that consulting, yeah, forum, is that like an invite only thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an application. I'll put a.
Oh, okay. There's an application. You can't just, right, join it.
Yeah.
You've,
yeah,
got to. Okay.
Yep.
Got it. What's it? What is the threshold? You've got to show us your stuff. Is that the threshold?
Show your consulting site, pretty much. I mean, like, yeah.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah. But what if they don't have one? What if they're just getting into there and they want to? They don't have, yeah, a consulting site. They just have their projects.
That's okay too. Like, just a link to that. Right. Just basically to show, okay, your.
Yeah,
legit enough, you know.
Right,
like,
got it.
It's a real soft, yep, you know, gateway. So,
actually, yeah, after this, I'm probably going to shoot a. I'll probably go outside and shoot it because I'm, you know, sick of being in my windowless office here. Mm-hmm. Somebody emailed me. It was a just finishing his degree. I think he's year three or something of his, yeah, degree or something like that. And he's worried. How does he stand out? Right,
yeah,
you know,
great
usual thing, right? How can, yeah, I, you know, what can I do to stand out? And then I chuckled because in his email he said, "Oh, here's my YouTube channel with my videos I've done on. I'm really passionate about audio, you know, electronics, and
done.
He's done this whole suite of done,
yeah,
done.
Yeah,
you already,
right,
stand out to, yeah, 99 more, yeah, than 99.99% of other, yeah, graduates.
Yeah."
It's done. I just had to chuckle, and it was.
I was reviewing a resume recently, and
yep,
and it was the same thing where like he's like, you know, he's got the usual like experience, yeah, he has some good experience up front, and you know some of his classwork and stuff like that. I got to the bottom, and yep, I was just like, where are all your projects? Like he's like, oh,
yeah,
well,
exactly.
I didn't think I should put those on. I'm like, no,
oh,
you should definitely,
no,
like definitely put those on there, and,
oh,
and links to your,
yes,
website,
links,
where they,
yes,
are focused. You know, like.
Don't, yeah, just say it and don't just use the words. Like, you,
yeah,
know, you can often include photos in your resume. It's fine to include,
oh,
like, you know, we always recommend, I'm sure both of us will recommend keeping your resume to like one or two sheets tops,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Maybe,
yeah, especially
two
if
tops.
You're young. I'd say one if you're
young. Oh, yeah. Well, no, even if you're
young.
Well, when you get older, you find you don't actually need a resume, really, you know, because,
yeah,
you're finding jobs in other ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, like two sheets tops, but it's okay if you include a whole bunch of photos. Because trust,
yeah,
me, when you've got 100 resumes and you're flicking through them like,
that's,
this,
right,
and you're going, oh yeah, like you'll read the summary at the top and then you'll probably, you know, like your, mm-hmm, eyes are glazing over because there's your 100 resume. And then,
yep,
you're just, oh, they're like, oh, this is thick. And you see all the photos and you're, holy shit, it's something different. So you're going to,
yeah,
be looking at the photos, you know, because it's,
yeah,
visually stimulating and you're just going to remember that person. You're probably almost certainly going to get an interview. Like,
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's tough when, I think a lot of the traditional advice to, like if you go to like a career services office and things like that, they're going to be like, here's how you fit into this box that IBM asked for, or this, Apple, or even Apple, you know, in a best case scenario, Tesla and Apple recruit here, and here's what they want. Yep. It's like, they're going to tell you how to do that thing. And it's like, yeah, you are probably going to stand out through an HR individual at these big companies.
Mm.
But if you're going outside of that, or even if you want to give it a shot, you know, like put a couple photos in there, you know, I think that's great. Yep. Like, you know, still work within the rules, but bend them a bit, you know?
Because even companies like famously like Tesla that, you know, don't like from the top down, they like, it's fine if you're not qualified. We don't care. What can you do? You know, are you innovative? That kind of thing. Yeah. You know? But even those companies, you still have to get through HR, right? So you've got to have whatever they're looking for. You have to give them that. Otherwise, they, you know.
I think Dave's frame is really right, though, too, is just think about it. Try and empathize with what the person, the engineer reading your resume. Like, yeah, you still have to get, you know, you have to check enough boxes to get past HR. Okay, fine. But once you do, then what? Like, you're in a stack of paper. How do you make it compelling enough, right? And as much as I think, you know, a career services person telling you that your job at Dairy Queen is going to, you know, show that you were a good worker and all these other, it's just, you know, like
if you have to
choose between putting another project line on your resume and your Dairy Queen experience, put the project line, you know, like
exactly.
And if you haven't done stuff yet, go start today, you know, like, and document as you go, you know?
Just do what I do in my video last night. Go pull a project out of GitHub and modify it. Do something like that. You know, you don't even have to start from scratch. Just, you know, take an existing project, modify it, do something nice with it, you know.
Yeah, I think as long as you're, like, upfront about it, right? I remember the first time.
Oh, no, it's like, it's like, you know, it's not like, oh, yeah, I designed this Raspberry Pi, right? It's like, you know.
Right, right. It's not designed Trezor wallet. It's a modified community version of Trezor wallet.
Yes,
right?
Exactly. You've got to do something substantial to it. You know, you can't just take it out and build it. You've got to, you know, substantially give back. And then, you know, but that's just one thing. And then you get experience doing that and then maybe your own projects and things like that and start putting it on there. But even that's valuable. Even that, you'll stand out above, you know, 90% of other applicants.
Yeah.
So,
now, if you can put some PCB renders and animations on your resume, some, I guess you wouldn't put animations, but if you could put the renders.
Oh, they're schmick. Oh, yeah. Oh, these are sexy.
What is this?
Yeah, we've got a link. Yeah, where's the link? Oh, I also want to put it in here. Spectacular PCB renders and animations. Who's it done by? It's done by Schottky on the EEV blog forum. Published these on the EEV blog forum. And yeah, they're just wow. wow. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I could go screen thing.
It looks like a bunch of, I mean, it's a bunch of like power handling type stuff. It's got huge inductors and looks like, power converter
big
boards.
Big screw terminals and, and it's just, oh my goodness. It's like, you can tell it's like a render, a Photoshop render, but it just looks so gorgeous you don't care. Like, and he's got like oscilloscope probes and.
Yeah, it almost looks like kind of like steampunky, kind of, it's got like the dark, you know,
high the
dark shadows and stuff.
It's exactly. Big in like the industrially type, you know, set in shadows. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like it's done in some dingy warehouse somewhere, you know.
Yeah, it's amazing the rendering stuff that happens these days, right? I mean, that's just
It's just insane. My mind's blown. It's just nuts. And he's got video as well, but warning, it is vertical video. The pictures are better than the video, although I haven't watched them all. But just absolute. So hats off to Schottky on the EEV blog forum. Just, oh no, here's one. This one's not vertical video. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh.
I can't see what you're seeing if you're trying to show it here.
Look. All right. Hang on. I will. Here you go. I will go like this, and I'll go like this, and I'll go like. Oh,
he's not doing it.
Lewis Rossman just popped up. Hang on. Here we go. Here we go. Here it is. You can see it now?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Wow. It's like, wait, hang on. They'll do the exploded thing. Here it comes. you've got to watch the video version of this. Oh, look at that.
That's cool.
That's just, yeah. That's just nuts. That reminds me of Branch Electronics. I forget his name. Branch Electronics YouTube channel. Check that out if you want super high quality, like, just mind-blowing, you know, tear down photos. It's just, you know, animation. It's just insane. Absolutely insane. And he contacted me and he said, yeah, like, he spends like 50 or 100 hours actually producing each video. It's just like, you know, he actually tears down, he's got a process for, he actually tears down the products and he photographs them and he and then, you know, and then adds renders on top and does all sorts of, you know, stuff to it, and it's just absolutely incredible renders he's got. So yeah, Branch Electronics, just insane. I don't like his voiceover. He's paying someone to do the voiceover, I think, and I don't like the voiceover, but apart from that,
you should offer to do it for free, Dave. You should
offer to, no, I'm even worse on the voiceover.
Offer your services.
Nope.
Yeah, I mean, this is really cool, like the rendering stuff. I feel like at a certain point it loses efficacy in terms of, like, I think it's really great for product shots, for selling, again, to sell to your clients, you know, that
marketing
kind of thing.
Like, stuff and Kickstarters and stuff. Yeah.
But some people go really far. Like, I've seen a lot of stuff with Blender and KiCad recently too, and like, it's really cool. I haven't found a need for it past, like, you know, like there's like built-in rendering.
Yeah,
fine.
No, I'm happy with a 20-year-old, you know, now, probably, how long's 3D renders on PCB been around? Altium were the first to do it, I think. Oh, geez, that would have to be 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, and like I'm just happy with the basic. I'm just happy to get something. I'm just happy to get something that shows my solder mask expansion and my, you know, silk screen and stuff.
If it's functional and and it just shows if you're like, if you're stepping on your own components or something like that.
Yep.
I think that's really where its value comes in for me. But there are, I mean, first off, I think it definitely grabs the eye, right? So if you're scrolling down your Twitter feed or similar,
incredible.
It's like, oh man, that's gonna pop out every time. So if you're trying to get attention for something, I think it does make a lot of sense.
It does the job really well. So I don't know what software he uses. Does he say what software he uses there? Yeah, were created in Blender. Yep, of course they were. Yep.
Blender. Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just cool. It's incredible. It's mind blowing. I don't understand how they can do this.
And Blender's free as well, I think. So that's
I think it is. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but apparently, there's an art to it. Like, it's not something that, you know, idiots like us can just go into and expect to produce really high-quality stuff like this. There's massive learning curves and, And even then, like, some, you know, really good blenderers can't do some stuff that other exceptional blenderers can do, you know?
Right.
There's like...
Yeah, it's its own skill set,
it's,
right?
It's, I mean, it's that powerful. It's, you develop your own methods and stuff to do it. And it's just, that's just crazy.
That's like, great. He should offer that as a service. That would be great. I would.
Yes.
I would definitely feel
there's
like
there's a niche. There is a niche. Yeah. Yes.
Right. Just
there
like
is
a. It's like glamour shots for electronics,
niche,
you know.
Right there. Right.
Did you guys
so
have glamour
someone
shots?
Should take Chris's course. Sorry.
Did you have glamour shots? Like, was that ever a thing there?
Glamour shots? What's glamour shots?
No, it was like the 80s and 90s. Look up glamour shots.
Oh, right, Rock posing with the
like, it was like a service that you used to hire in like the 80s and 90s. It was like you know, like feathered hair and like everything was like soft, like super soft lighting, and it was just like, and they'd like add sparkles and stuff, like, so like you'd have these shots that like, and like it looked like they had like a fog machine or something too. It was, there is some fantastic old glamour shots, but like for me it's just like this, I use it now as a terminology just for like you know, like way overdone kind of thing. So
okay, I'm seeing, have you seen the Rock's famous one?
I've seen that one.
It's just great. It's just classic 90s. It's 90s.
It must be 90s. I thought it was like late 80s maybe.
I never did that. No, I there's very few photos of me like pre mid 2000s. Like,
really?
There's just, ever since digital cameras came along, it'd have to be mid 2000s. No, there's very few photos of me. There's probably one or two photos of me as a teenager. Like, there's very few. It just wasn't a thing. Just wasn't, you know, wasn't a thing in our family. We just didn't take, you know.
Yeah, I mean, these days there's photos everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone's photo obsessed with their phones. Yeah. But geez, you know, no. Apparently, back then it was like.
In searching for this, I see that there's, in 2019, there were still 5 glamour shot locations available. So. But, amazing. So you could still get them done.
Anyway, getting back to, somebody should seriously, there is a niche for that. Take Chris's course, and I would recommend this to Shotkey here on the EV Blog Forum. Actually, yeah, take your course and set up a consulting business for doing shots like this. Seriously, like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but if it takes like 30 hours. Advertise
in every electronics forum and, sorry?
Even if it's 30 hours to do this sort of thing, and even if you're charging $50 an hour, that's a $1,500 photo. So that's pretty.
Yeah, yeah.
That's pretty pricey. I'm not sure I would pay that personally. Like, I would pay for a service.
But if you're doing a Kickstarter, you would. Like, if you're doing a Kickstarter and you don't have the skills yourself.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I would, because one shot sells it.
That's, yeah.
One shot will sell it. Yeah. Like, you know. Yep.
Yeah, you were doing some photography stuff recently, right? You were doing some lightbox stuff?
Yes, I did a do-it-yourself lightbox. Yes, for PCB photography. I've wanted to do it for, you know, years, because I always, every time I want to do like a decent shot, I've got to cobble something together. Like, I can just use my regular overhead, you know, ceiling lights, and then just point, you know, camera on a tripod and get it at the right angle and, and take it. But it's not... You know, it's not the best that it could be, right?
Yeah, I feel like just reflections off of things and,
It's just not good. So, you know, so often if I want to go to a bit more trouble, I've got to set up my studio lights, you know, like I'll lean them over and I'll set up the right angle tripod camera attachment so it's pointing down and there's light evenly lit around the sides. But I've never had a dedicated solution for that.
Mm.
Yeah, we were doing the live show the other week with Big Clive.
Mm.
And others, Martin Lawton, among others.
Was that posted somewhere or no?
Yeah. It's on my second channel.
I'll link to that.
It's a 2-hour live show of like, you know, half a dozen of us. And yeah, and he showed off his do-it-yourself lightbox solution, which I censored out because he, you know, it was kind of secret. So I didn't know he was going to do a video on it. So that spurred me into going, yeah, I should probably finally get off my ass and make my own do-it-yourself lightbox. And so I experimented. So the first video was just, you know, first experiments, and the second one was even better.
Yeah.
So I did a second part video of that, and
cool.
Yep, everyone's got their own method to do it, but yeah, no, it's not hard. You've just got to diffuse the light. And
I punted on that. I bought $80 on Amazon. It's got a built-in light.
Yep,
it folds down to nothing, and it's fantastic. Like, because I tried a DIY version, and it just I just didn't have the room for it.
So what is it? A light tent? Do you have a link or something?
I have a link somewhere.
Is it one of those light tents or what is it? Is it a...
Yeah, it's like fabric based. It's probably, you know, like half a meter on each side of a cube.
That's a light tent. Yeah, I've also got one of those, and I use those for actual product photography and stuff. Oh, okay. Like that.
So this is different than that.
Oh yeah, this is different. This is smaller, so like boards. So if I'm going to do a, you know, a really high res, you know, high quality photo of a board, then apparently, it's just, you know, I've got, a big light tent, but it's like this big, you know, it's giant. And, you know, it's just pain in the ass to get it out and set it up and, you know.
Got it. So you keep the light box out, you're saying?
It's just not there. I want something that's just there. I'm doing a tear down. I can whack a board under there. I can do a high-res photo. Boom, done.
Mm, okay.
You know.
Got it.
So some people are saying use a scanner. Use a flatbed scanner for circuit boards. Apparently, you put a circuit board in a flatbed scanner, and apparently it's gorgeous.
Oh.
So I'm going to have to try that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Where will you source such old technology, Dave?
The dumpster. I've got a dumpster.
I know.
That keeps producing.
I knew exactly where it was coming from.
Yep. So, yeah, I might try that.
Yeah, that's great.
Might do that today. Just whack it in the scanner and see what output. Because you'll get much higher res with that as well. You know, you can do 1,200 dots per inch on a large board or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's going to be evenly lit because it's lit from underneath as it scans under. And
and it catches color and everything too?
Well, it should. I'm not sure how accurate the color is.
Yeah.
Like mine, my light box, I use accurate high CRI studio LED lights. So it should give an accurate color.
Got it.
Presentation, but I haven't done like a proper color chart calibration and things like that yet. Yeah. I can't find it. It's here somewhere. I moved labs and I've lost my color chart.
I got one recently and I haven't used it. Oh, here it is. Like one of these things?
Yes, yeah. Yes, those.
This yep. one was only 20 bucks on AliExpress. So yep. I don't use it much, but...
Yeah, I got the color chart and a white chart and a grayscale chart mm-hmm. and everything. Yeah, you know?
Like one of those flip book ones, white... those things.
Yeah, no, they're just separate cards. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Yeah, it is nice. It yep. is nice.
So I haven't actually done any calibration, but yeah. But anyway, yeah, that worked. It's amazingly easy to do yourself. It's just, you know, it's nice having a dedicated solution for something, not having to cobble it together every time, which is just pain in the ass.
Yeah, I just found it, so I just linked it in there. I'll link it in the show notes as well. But is that what you're talking about?
Oh yeah, there you go. Yeah, yeah, light 10. I've got one that's even larger than that. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
So you're saying you don't like to actually go and set it up. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, no, I hate setting it up, and that's not adequate for like a PCB, because a PCB is a flat thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a flat board. It's different.
Well, there's a top access, right? So you could zip the whole thing up.
Okay, there's top access in this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh yes, I see it. Yeah, there's a little window in the top.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. And has that just got the LEDs inside just pointing down?
Yeah,
it looks like it's got the LEDs.
It's built in, and then it's all reflective around so that it does light bounce and stuff too.
Okay, yeah. But that you're going to get reflections on that if you do PCBs given the height of that. Mm. So if you put your camera outside that cube, that'll be too tall.
Got
unless
it.
You've got a ridiculously long focal length
got
lens.
Got it, okay.
So, yep. Mm. Yep.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, when you see a nice photo, you see a Devellian... photo these days, it's usually a lot of extra work.
Yes, they're great. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, highly recommended. Do it yourself, simple solution, works well.
Okay.
Yep. So I've got to put more effort into spit and polish that though.
Yeah,
I've got to finish it off. Yeah.
Did you have a chance to listen to the RP 2040 show last week? Did you get all your questions answered?
I did not, unfortunately.
It's okay. It is a microcontroller with external flash. That's what they. That was the answer to the to your query.
To my query.
Yeah.
There were. I think I probably had majority support. I did it on Twitter. I did a poll on Twitter. I think I had majority support that it was not technically a microcontroller. Microcontroller with external flash.
I was surprised to see that there was some people were saying there's other micros out there that are doing this sort of thing. There was an NXP one too where they're moving it outside of the chip, so.
Oh, it's been done since the 8032 days.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
The Intel 8032 in the mid to late 70s. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, isn't anything new there.
Yeah.
But it's not a microcontroller, damn it. I'm still going to die on that hill.
That's your hill to die on, my friend.
It's an Asterix microcontroller.
it is some cheap silicon, and if it's available it might be the only part that's available these days, so who knows.
Right.
Liam, who was on the show, has since written about the journey as well, and he's got a bunch of code snippets and stuff like that, so we'll link that in as well, the journey to Raspberry Pi silicon. So I'm glad they're still writing that stuff up.
I'm working on a little project I've got right under my microphone here. I can't get out or disturb my microphone, but I'm not going to tell you what it is, but it once again requires choosing a micro or maybe choosing an existing dev board. And I tried having a look. I was going to put this on. I was going to ask on Twitter, but I did find one. A microcontroller, like a board, like a little Raspberry Pi Pico thing, you know, or a Feather or whatever it is. One that actually had a built-in LCD or an OLED display.
Mm.
One that had like built onto the board, not a daughter board that goes on top, but an actual one that's built on.
Have you seen those Helltech ones that Andreas Spies reviews? They're like 15 bucks. They got a little OLED. They've got a ESP32 on them. They've got a LoRa chip on them, and they're 15 bucks. Like, it's insane.
Right.
I got a couple of those around. They're
kind
of crap, but the antenna's crap for sure.
Is it Helltech or Helltech?
Heltec, I believe.
Heltec.
And if you look up Andreas's video on him, he's got a couple of videos on him.
Right.
But basically, they're going to be like AliExpress and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Got it.
They're cool little boards. I mean, like.
Oh yeah, no, that's the one I found.
Oh okay.
That's actually the one I found. Yeah. 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 I ended up finding that in my.
What are you looking to do with it?
I basically just want. I'm just looking to do some ADC measurements, some high precision ADC measurements.
Oh, then I would definitely not use the Helltech thing.
Why?
because
I'll have an external daughter board attached to this, like I'll have an external board attached to the bottom, and it'll actually be a combo flat flex board.
Okay,
right, so it'll be flex rigid, you know, combo board. So I want to attach this, whether or not I actually, you know, use an off-the-shelf thing like this, or whether or not I just simply design everything I want, including the micro I want to use, onto the flat flex I'm going to design anyway.
So I've done that before with the Feather form factor and the little OLED screens. It's super simple. Yep. You know, like the Adafruit libraries are great for that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, you can get it to plug on top, yeah.
The thing that stinks about it is that, like, so, like, you're plugging these things together, and then you got to rotate sideways, right? So, like, basically, because it's going to be... So, like, you could take, you know, the stack of three boards and then turn it on its side, and then it's kind of like a front panel display style, so you could do that sort of thing.
Right, yep.
Mounting will be okay, but it, honestly, I've done a couple prototypes like that. It's been great.
Yeah. I'm thinking, because I got to do the board anyway, like I might as well integrate, like I might as well just do an Arduino Nano or something and just put the Atmel processor straight on there and it becomes an Arduino. Yeah. It's just...
Are you definitely using an external ADC or no?
Yes, I'll be using an external ADC. Okay. Right. Yep, external precision ADC. There'll be a bunch of analog measurement stuff.
Got it.
And I don't need USB. Mm-hmm. I don't need like anything else. I don't need...
because I mean, there's a lot of dev board. So I was just gonna show you my little EFM8 dev board, right? That's got like a screen on
I've
it.
Got quite a few of those.
Yeah, yeah, so that's got nice stuff in there too. I mean, you could do that if you wanted. Yep. The laser bead that I have is
no. It has to be that sort of like small form factor, like we've been talking about. Yeah. It's got to be that small narrow form factor, just for reasons.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mean, another thing you could do is you could get like a, you know, maybe get something that just drives like an FFC, like a flat flex, and then have the screen wherever you want it to be, right? But then you gotta...
Yeah, just flop over. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, just doing it myself. But then it's gotta be like it's gotta be an existing ecosystem, so it's gotta be an Arduino or an ESP32, or it's gotta be, you know, one of the things, because I don't want to have to write drivers for the...
Yeah.
You know, for the screen and everything like that. I don't want to dick around.
Got it.
Right? Somebody's already written all that stuff.
Then I would definitely recommend the Adafruit OLED ones. Those are fantastic. Like, they're super sharp.
Yeah, it's just a multiple stack. That'll mean I'll have like a three-stack board solution. So I'll need the screen and then I'll need the board.
Yeah, I'd say prototype that though too.
You know, yeah, I could.
Prototype that just because it's not as big as you think it would be, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, you know, I know.
It's the height of two sets of headers, two sets of like stacking headers effectively. So it's only going to be, you know, 10 centimeters. I don't know, like maybe less than that.
Probably doesn't matter in the end. I don't know. It's just
10 centimeters. No.
Yeah. Yes, I did look and consider that one.
My ability to metric in my head is gone down over time.
Right. You Yanks.
I know.
You Seppos.
I know.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, weird. And, you know, and like some of them have got Wi-Fi. I don't necessarily want Wi-Fi, although maybe some people might get use out of Bluetooth for it, maybe.
Okay.
Perhaps.
This is going to be like a product maybe or no?
Yeah, it could be a product, like, you know, just a simple open source product, whether or not I sell it myself or I just open it.
Got it. So this is an interesting use case, actually, because I've been wondering about this. So I don't know if you saw the new SparkFun micro mod, I think they call it.
No, I don't keep. I've just given up keeping track of all these micro boards.
So it uses an M2 header. We talked about it, I think, briefly on here. Maybe it was when it was a guest episode, but it's an M2 header, and then the microcontroller. So they've put another type of standard out there.
Hang on, what is an M2 header?
That's like what you plug a flash hard drive in to your motherboard with. So it's like off the motherboard.
Oh, what?
Right. It's like a high density edge connector.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
oh, yes, I see it now. Yeah. Yep.
And so they have this new standard for it. I don't really get it. I mean, like, the idea is that, like, you could go and switch out the processor, and then the baseboard's always the same. It feels like a weird place to put modularity.
It has a long history of this. Before all this maker movement stuff and before all this, before all these micros came along.
You're going to say PC 104, aren't you? Don't say PC 104.
No, I'm not saying PC 104. No, there were other formats. There were other in the age of PC 104.
Ah, right.
Oh, so right. Lately, you know, in the 90s and the 2000s, early 2000s, right? Yeah. There were these form factors, and they would use like a memory form factor. Sure. There was one. In fact, there was a community. There was a consortium of manufacturers, I think. Don't quote me, who got together and standardized on a memory stick, you know, they like the SIM module form factor, and they'd put their computers onto these SIM modules.
Like the SODIMM, you mean? Like that kind of thing?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the SODIMM. Yeah. Yeah, the SODIMM connectors. I can't remember the consortium name or whatever, but that was all the rage, you know? And there's many other companies who have used existing PC-based solutions to develop single-board computers. That's their interface. So there's huge history there, so there's got to be a
sure. I guess it's the it doesn't seem like there's much on the actual swappable piece. That's the piece that's what I don't understand.
No, it's not. There's a micro and there's an oscillator and there's a Bluetooth antenna or a Wi-Fi antenna, but that's it.
Right. And right? So what you were just saying about like the we could switch out for Bluetooth or whatever else, like that would be that's what made me think of this sort of thing, because you could go and swap it out pretty easily.
Right. Put in a Bluetooth version of it, but it's,
Every time I look at an M2 header, I'm like, oh, that looks so big. And then, like, you actually see it in real life, you're like, oh, my God, that's tiny. So, like, it is really quite tiny.
Yeah, it's small. Yeah, so, it's pretty small. Yeah. No, I can, there's a niche there for, but then again, like, you've got to buy the M2 header for your, I don't know how much. I've never priced an M2 header.
Yeah,
but
less than a dollar.
Right, okay.
But then the other hardware to actually screw it down as well. I mean, like, it does add up.
I was going to say, there's other stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've got to add the press fit stud, for the, like,
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I think the other solutions are more popular, the ones with the pin headers, the stackable pin header, like your Arduino style, or the Castellation side of the board style, So, yeah, they're just more usable in more applications, I think. This is
honestly, these days I just think use whatever is best supported for what the software you want to do,
Yeah, exactly. That's all I care about for this solution, this project that I've got. It's like everything else, like that's all I care about, because I don't want to spend a month writing the bloody software. I just want to I might have to write my own analog to digital converter interface and read the sensor, but that's it, right? That's the only thing I should have to write. Everything else should just be handled.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. I mean, how much speed do you need on your ADC readings?
Oh, nothing.
No?
Nothing.
Oh.
No, it could be 5 times a second.
You should try out, CircuitPython, MicroPython. That would be another good one. The thing I really like about that is, the prototyping.
No, it's just a new language. No, I just want...
It's super simple,
Arduino
man.
Arduino EC.
I'm just saying.
No, it doesn't matter. It might be super simple, but no. It's like, why? I already know how to program in C. Why would I learn CircuitPython or whatever?
Because you're a content creator.
I'm a content creator, but no, sometimes I just want to...
Bring more people into the industry,
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, okay. Right, but then you can't just
really
say it's
simple.
You can't just say it's super simple, right? It's a learning curve. You can't just throw it out there. It's super simple.
I mean, here's the thing. I've been through both learning curves of C and MicroPython, and let me tell you, MicroPython's a lot easier. It's
sure, but I already have the C skills.
True. Okay. Yeah.
And almost everyone programs in Arduino. I mean, how many people out there are Arduino literate?
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Practically everyone. So, it's...
I wouldn't agree with the practically everyone, but I would agree with many, yeah.
And it'd be jumping on a bandwagon. That is which is fine if you want to do that, but switching to CircuitPython to do that would, the reason that you do it, there's no advantage. It's simply you're jumping on a bandwagon because I want to do videos on that topic, right?
No, I think there actually is. I think there actually is very specific advantage, which is the prototyping is faster. I can tell you that specifically, it is much faster.
Right.
It is a change in paradigm, right? So it's no longer like, it's not click, upload, verify, test, whatever. It's literally like, write code, hit save, and you're just seeing this live action happen. It's something different.
Okay, well, that's pretty
cool. It's worth trying, I think, maybe on its own, maybe not for a project you actually want to
Right.
I think what you're saying here is making progress, right? You want to make progress fast.
Yes.
And
I want to make progress fast. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, Jay Carlson posted a project he was doing, and he was saying on Twitter, he's like, I'm really proud of myself just because I got it past the finish line. And like, I really resonated with that because, yeah, it's so easy to just like over-optimize and just getting something out there, even if it's suboptimal, just pushing past the finish line is really important, you know?
So tell me about it.
But you should make another video about Micro or CircuitPython. You should try that.
Oh, yeah, no. Yeah, that'd be a yes. Yeah. That'd be a thing. Yep.
Cool.
Yep, totally.
That's great.
But, yep, not necessarily for this project. Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. It's all right, Dave. You're not paying me for consulting anyways.
Yep.
And if you were.
See, because I would have to do, right, because I wouldn't want that, me learning MicroPython to be part of that video series designing that thing. Mm. Right? Yeah. I want designing that widget to be just designing that widget. I don't want to have to, you know, then do two or three videos, you know, learning the intricacies of MicroPython, right? I'd rather that. So I'd have to do that first, then jump into this project. So I've already, so if I choose that, if I choose MicroPython, well, I've got to go learn MicroPython first. Right. And then because I'm a content creator, I'm going to shoot video about it, right? So then I've got to create a whole video series on MicroPython or whatever. Mm-hmm. Before I can even start work on my little thing that I just got excited about yesterday.
That's true.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Good point.
Enthusiasm for a project is everything, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have the enthusiasm to finish it, then you're.
Momentum. You know. Yeah. Very important.
Yep. So that's why I poo pooed your MicroPython thing.
Well, so you also like
poo pooing for
things,
this project.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, come on. No, I have legitimate reasons always for poo-pooing things.
Yeah,
and that's my legitimate reason. It's because I was excited about this project and I just want to go, boom, I just want to do something while I'm excited.
Yeah.
And that does not include learning CircuitPython. So, sorry, dude.
It's okay. No skin off my back.
Yep. Oh, boy. We're way over.
Yeah.
We're an hour and 16 minutes. Yeah. That flew by.
The video editor is going to be pissed about this.
I was going to do shit today, and now I've got to edit this video, don't I? Glutton for punishment.
Yep.
No, I'll just slap it together. I'll just side by side render. That's it.
Yep.
No taking out ums and ahs.
That's it. Done. If you don't like how we sound on this video, go listen to the Amp Hour audio podcast.
Yep. Because, my video version will be using the MOV file, which we argued about this before. Well, you just wondered before the show, does it use lossless? Yeah. Compression or not, I think it uses lossy compression, so it won't sound as good as a WAV file. So, anyway.
All right.
Yep.
Talk to you soon.
That's it. Catch you next time.
Whether talking about consulting or stressing about chip availability, we compress the crap out of the week's news each and every show down to that crunchy, high-def sound made for your 100K speakers, all thanks to the generosity and goodwill of our patrons. Join the crowd in the Discord channel at patreon.com/theamphour.